Hi, this is the February 2024 issue of Scholastic's Super STEM. Front cover, illustrations of dinosaurs. A day as a dinosaur. What was life like for Tyrannosaurus Rex? Step back into the past to find out. And that is exactly what we're going to do, but first we turn the page for their mini STEM read. Surprise! Sloths can swim. Sloths are known for being the slowest mammal, but they have a surprising secret. They're super strong swimmers. Sloths live in the tropical rainforests of Central and South America. They spend their lives hanging from trees and eating leaves. To save energy, sloths don't travel much. If they don't need to move far, they won't, says Sarah Ferrero Carballa. She's an environmental scientist who studies sloths, but sometimes sloths do change locations. They do this to find food or a mate or if they feel threatened. Sloths often live near water. Sometimes the only way to reach another area is to swim across a river. Sloths can float, tread water, and swim 3 times faster than they move on land. They can also hold their breath underwater for up to 40 minutes. They do this by slowing down their heart rate. Not bad for the tropical rainforest's favorite slowpoke. And associated with this mini STEM read, there is a chart showing the swimming speeds of select mammals. Ask your parent, teacher, or guardian to go over the chart with you. We're going to skip over the illustrated story, The War of the Worlds, Can Humans Survive an Alien Invasion? But if you're interested in that, have your parent, teacher, or guardian go over those pages with you. So we'll turn right away to their main feature, A Day as a Dino King. And look for these STEM words, carnivore, an animal that eats only meat, scavenger, an animal that eats decaying organisms, herbivore, an animal that eats only plants, fossil, the remains or traces of organisms that have hardened into rock. What was life like for a giant meat-eating Tyrannosaurus Rex? You're about to find out. Gurgle, grumble, growl. Your empty stomach wakes you up. It's a hot afternoon. The air feels thick and muggy, clinging to the scales and feathers along your back. You open your mouth, revealing 60 razor-sharp teeth, each 6 inches long. Your eyes, each as big as a softball, slowly open. You look down at yourself and see you are a Tyrannosaurus Rex. At first, all you see around you are plants. There are no roads or houses. There won't be people to build them for another 66 million years. The tallest things are trees. The only sounds are the buzz of insects and the chirps of birds. Your sharp eyes spot something moving in the shadows. It's a tiny, rat-like mammal, too small for your giant appetite. Now you need to eat a jumbo dinosaur for lunch. You lift your nose and sniff. A deliciously sour scent floats through the air. A dinosaur is rotting a few miles away. Yum! You get up to search for it. Your legs are powerful with killer 8-inch claws at the tip of each toe. You need that strength and grip to lift your body up. At 40 feet long and 20,000 pounds, you're roughly the size and weight of a school bus. As you stand, be careful not to topple over. Your arms are only 3 feet long, tiny compared with the rest of your body. You can't use them to balance. Luckily, you have your tail to help you stay steady on your feet. Boom! Your weight shakes the ground as you stalk into the forest. It's hard to eat enough to fuel a carnivore as big as you. It takes 200,000 calories a day. That's more than 700 hamburger patties worth of meat. So you follow the stench of rot. While you can hunt, you're also a scavenger. You'll eat dead dinosaurs whenever you can. After all, they can't run away. Hopefully, other dinosaurs, especially the few other T-Rex in your area, don't get there first. A fight could be deadly. Your nose leads you to the carcass or dead body. It's a young Edmontosaurus. only 10 feet long. That's a fraction of your size. These herbivores, or plant eaters, have a thick, scaly body and a duck-like bill lined with hundreds of tiny teeth. But you're not alone. Bird-like dinosaurs called troodontids are pecking at the remains. These scavengers have already scarfed down the best parts. Annoyed, you snap at the small creatures, you'll have to find something else to eat. You hear a low-pitched rumbling from miles away. You move quickly toward the noise, well, as quickly as you can. You lumber along at 3 miles per hour. Finally, you reach the source of the sound. A herd of triceratops graze in a field, each one 30 feet long, 10 feet tall. 3 sharp horns poke from the top of their heads. You'll have to be careful when hunting these creatures. 1 jab could be fatal. You're hungry enough to risk it. Your scales and feathers blend in perfectly with the trees. You hide in the shadows, waiting for the right moment to strike. One of the triceratops moves closer to you. It lingers as the herd starts to leave. Now is your chance. With a great lunge, you crash into the triceratops. Your jaws latch around its throat before it can jab you with its horns. You deliver a crushing bite with 5 tons of force. A deep, proud growl leaves your throat. The rest of the triceratops flee, but you don't mind. You've got 13,000 pounds of food in front of you. You stomp on the chest of your prey, pinning it down so you can tear through its tough skin with your teeth. The meat inside is warm and filling. You'll survive another day. In fact, you'll live a full 23 years. Not bad for a T-Rex. After you die, something rare and amazing will happen to your bones. Mineral-rich water will seep into them, turning them into stone-like fossils. One day, humans will race to uncover them in a place known as Montana. But for now, you settle in to enjoy your hard-won lunch. There's some additional information at the bottom of these pages. We're on pages 12 and 13. What we know about T-Rex? Scientists are still studying Tyrannosaurus rex fossils to learn more about how the dinosaur looked and lived. Here are some of the fascinating finds. Feathered finds. Scientists have discovered fossil feathers on T-Rex relatives. That suggests T-Rex may have had feathers too. Slow walker. Computer models suggest T-Rex walked at an average of 3 miles an hour. That's half the speed scientists had expected. A rumble, not a roar. The throat of a T-Rex wasn't adapted for roaring. By studying modern-day relatives of T-Rex, some scientists think the dinos made a low rumbling noise similar to that of a crocodile. Pack hunter? Researchers recently discovered a group of T-Rex relatives that had been fossilized together. Some scientists suggest that dinos may have sometimes hunted in packs, as wolves do. Now we turn the page. Welcome to the world of dino hunting. In the early 1900s, fossil hunters raced to find dinosaur remains to sell to museums, step into their hot, dusty world. And on page 14, down at the bottom, there is a photograph of Barnum Brown. He is remembered as one of the world's best dinosaur bone collectors. Brown found most of the bones on display today at the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. Now on to the article, Welcome to Montana, Fossil Hunter. The year is 1908. You look out across a vast desert. Huge rocks jut out of the ground, striped with reds and browns. The layers of rock tell a story. You're learning how to read them. The layers contain a record of the environment dating back millions of years. Each colorful layer of stone is younger than the one below it. Since you were a child, you've been hooked on tales of giant reptiles called dinosaurs. Here in the deserts of the western U.S., people have been finding their huge fossilized bones. But you're here on a very specific mission. 6 years ago, fossil hunter Barnum Brown uncovered bones from an animal with a fitting name, Tyrannosaurus rex. It means Tyrant Lizard King. The teeth Brown found made one thing obvious. It was a giant meat eater. Today, Brown is searching for a big missing piece, a complete T-Rex skull. You're part of the small team tasked with finding one and digging it up. Brown isn't just any fossil hunter. It would take weeks for others to find what he can uncover in only a few days. Why? Brown knows how to follow the right clues. Fossils are often buried beneath many layers of dirt and rock. Brown can read the layers of rock to tell how ancient rivers moved. He has a talent for spotting the light blue and green tints that could mean a flood once swept through carrying mud and debris. When Brown finds a promising spot, it's time to dig. Sometimes he uses dynamite to blast rock away. But today, Brown decides to use horses attached to a plow. They easily scrape away 20 feet of soft earth. Achoo! You pull your bandana over your nose to filter out the dust. Brown spots an area that looks smoother and shinier than the rock around it. Could it be the edge of a fossil? You chip away at the rock with a special hammer. It's slow, exhausting work. Your arms ache. It's July, and the temperature has climbed to 100 degrees. But you keep going. Hours later, you start to see the shape of a bone. Could it be a jawbone? You switch to a digging knife to remove smaller bits of dirt and rock. Something comes into view, a 4-foot-long jawbone, a sharp, knife-sized tooth, an eye socket the size of a softball. You've uncovered a complete T-Rex skull. Brown shouts with joy. He rushes to coat the fossil in thick white plaster. This mud-like substance will harden, keeping the bone safe on the train ride to the museum back east. It will be removed later. As you move to help Brown, you can't help staring at those massive teeth. You used to imagine dinosaurs as giant, scaly cows waddling peacefully through fields of ferns. Now you realize just how dangerous life would have been millions of years ago when death was one chomp away. Now on to the next article, The Science of Swish. In basketball, teams of 5 players move a ball around a court and score points by putting it through a hoop. How do they do it? Jump shot breakdown. Pro basketball player LaMelo Ball of the Charlotte Hornets jumps into the air. In one smooth motion, he flicks his wrist, sending the ball soaring toward the hoop. This is called a jump shot, and it's one of the main ways basketball players score points. Shooting from the highest point of a jump has 2 advantages. One is that it makes it harder for defenders to block the shot. Shooting from high up also helps players shoot the ball in a high arc or curved path. Shots with higher arcs give the ball, which is about 9 inches wide, a greater chance of falling through the center of the 18-inch wide hoop. LaMelo Ball sinks his shot. Swish. Nothing but net. And associated with that article, there is a photograph of LaMelo Ball in action. Ask your parent, teacher, or guardian to go over the photo with you and the various steps of making that swish, nothing but net shot. More basketball basics on page 18, ball handling basics. Thump, thump, thump. That's the sound of a player dribbling a basketball or bouncing it between their hand and the floor. The best ball handlers move at lightning speeds while keeping the ball away from their opponents. What's their secret? Besides years of practice, they push the ball at the ground hard, causing it to move very fast, and they stop the ball before it bounces above their waist. Moving the ball fast and keeping it low make it harder for the defense to steal. And there is a photograph of a basketball player, Mariah Jefferson of the Phoenix Mercurys, and the ball handling basics are detailed in the call-outs on the photograph. Ask your parent, teacher, or guardian to go over those with you. Next up, slam dunk science. Nothing makes a crowd go wild like a player slamming the ball through the 10-foot-tall hoop. The move is called a dunk, and not everyone can do it. Taller players are more likely to be able to dunk the ball than shorter players, and that's because from a standing position they're closer to the basket. But even tall players usually need a running start to pull off this show-stopping move. And the photograph on this page is of NBA player Jackson Hayes, and the steps involved in making that slam dunk are illustrated here. Again, have your parent, teacher, or guardian go over those with you. Next up on page 20, an article titled, I Photograph Tiny Animals. There is an illustration of Nicky Bay. He takes amazing close-up pictures of spiders, insects, and other tiny critters. And there is a photograph of Nicky Bay taking a selfie with a huntsman spider on a dried leaf. These one-inch-wide spiders live in warm areas around the world. As we read the article, these stem words to know, species, a group of similar living things that are able to reproduce, invertebrate, an animal that doesn't have a backbone, nocturnal, describing a living thing that's active at night. The night was dark, and Nicky Bay could hear the hum of insects all around him. He was walking through the rainforest in his home country of Singapore, located in Southeast Asia. On the forest floor, he came across a fallen tree, the perfect place to look for tiny animals. He crouched down to get a better view. Shining his flashlight on the bark of the tree, Bay spotted several orange and black striped, pill-shaped bugs the size of pennies. He had seen a lot of tiny animals over the years, but nothing quite like these. He quickly snapped some photos. Later, Bay learned the critters were unknown to science. Scientists named the new species Singapore tigers. Bay is a macro photographer. That's someone who takes up-close pictures of tiny subjects, like insects and spiders. His images have appeared in scientific publications and magazines like SuperSTEM. Bay also teaches people how to find small creatures in the wild and how to take stunning photos of their own. Bay hopes his images inspire people to care about insects and other invertebrates. He recently spoke with SuperSTEM about taking photographs and why he thinks it's important for everyone to look a little closer at the world around them. So the question from SuperSTEM, how did you find the tiny animals that you photograph? The answer, in most cases, I just step outside and look around. Often I go to parks at night. That's when nocturnal insects come out. I'll walk around with my camera and a flashlight and search through branches, tree trunks, and leaf piles. When I find something I want to photograph, I'll squat down to inspect it. First, I'll take a photo from a foot or so away called a record shot. This test lets me see what the animal is and what it looks like. Then I'll slowly move closer for clearer pictures. If I'm looking for a specific species, I study it beforehand. I want to know, where is it found? Does it live on fallen logs or a particular plant? What is its size and shape? Does it build a certain type of web, nest, or other structure? For example, some spittlebugs build little white tubes for their young. To find these bugs, I'd have to look for these tubes. What's the coolest photo you've taken? Years ago, while I was on a group photo walk in Singapore, I found a golden orb weaver. That's a large spider that builds complicated webs. As I was taking some shots of the spider, a huge cicada flew right into its web, and the spider grabbed it. I knew it was a rare moment. I took photos with a camera that had a special wide lens, which made the cicada appear bigger than the spider. The shots turned out surprisingly well. Why is this work important to you? Photographing small animals has given me a deeper appreciation for them. Every living thing has a role in nature. Even the smallest creatures have their own form of beauty and some lesson to teach us. My work has also helped scientists. It's important to me that the scenes I capture are scientifically accurate. I photograph animals in their natural environment, and I am very careful not to disturb them. There's a lot that scientists don't know about invertebrates. Scientists have used my photos to figure out where certain animals live and to understand some of their behaviors. I love that my photos have helped scientists identify new species. What advice would you give to kids who want to try macro photography? Anyone can look for small animals and make observations. You can start with taking photos with a phone. The most important part of macro photography is finding and documenting the world around you. Be curious and examine all the little things in nature. Collect photos of all the different tiny creatures right under your nose. Treat it like collecting Pokemon. And along with this article, there are a few of Bay's photos. At the top, one is of a lantern bug. Few insects are as flashy as lantern bugs. Some lantern bugs have long snouts with bright tips. They look like they might glow, but they don't. The next one is an isopod. Some isopods, called pill bugs, can roll into a ball. It's a cute way to defend against predators. And the bottom one is the photo of the spider and the cicada that we discussed in the article. Next up in their You Decide section, would you rather live without toilets or light bulbs? Toilets flush away our waste, light bulbs brighten our world. You use these inventions every day, but which piece of technology would you rather live without? Now here are some more facts to help you make your choice. Our first few facts about the toilet. Without a toilet, you'd need another way to get rid of your waste. That's important because human poop contains germs that cause disease. Before flush toilets were invented, people often dumped waste into the streets or rivers. Others collected it in holes in the ground. As a result, germs spread in drinking water and made people sick. Unfortunately, about 3.6 billion people who don't have access to flush toilets today still face these risks. The first flush toilet, invented in 1596 in England by Sir John Harrington, the godson of Queen Elizabeth I. Over time, many inventors improved its design. Now on to the light bulb. Without a light bulb, your life would be a lot darker. Traveling or working in darkness can be difficult and dangerous. You might need to wake up early to make the most of the sun's light, then go to bed at sunset. And that's what people did before light bulbs existed. It's also what 675 million people who live without electricity still do today. Gas lamps and candles provide some light, but they can be dangerous. If they tip over, they could start a fire. And the history of the light bulb. In the late 1800s, many people were trying to create long-lasting electric light bulbs. In 1879, Thomas Edison's team invented a light bulb that lasted for 13 hours. Today, most people use light-emitting diode LED bulbs. They light up when electricity flows through devices called diodes. LED bulbs use less electricity than older types of bulbs. Here are some other fun facts. The average home in the U.S. has 67 light bulbs. LED bulbs can last 50,000 hours. Older types of bulbs didn't last more than 1,200 hours. So which would you rather live without, the toilet or the light bulb? And the final article in the February 2024 edition of SuperSTEM, Bird on the Brink, How Sneaky Scientists Are Using Fake Eggs to Help Save a Bird at Risk. An enormous bird lowers her bald pink head over a blue-green egg. She gently nudges it with her beak, then slowly settles her body on top of it. Over the next several weeks, this mother and her mate will take turns keeping the precious egg warm. What this bird, called a California condor, doesn't know is that the egg she's caring for is not her egg. The egg in her nest is a smart egg. Designed to look just like the real thing, it's filled with devices that detect temperature, movement, and sound. The egg is part of an effort by scientists to help the condors. At the Oregon Zoo's breeding center, zookeepers pair up the birds to have chicks. The zoo takes the real eggs out of the nest to protect them. and replaces them with fake eggs until the chicks are ready to hatch. The staff helps raise the young birds and eventually releases them into the wild. Scientists hope the smart egg will collect data that will help the zoo breed even more condors. The birds need all the help they can get. Just a few decades ago, these feathered giants nearly became extinct. The California condor is the largest bird in North America. It's got a wingspan of almost 10 feet, 3 meters. These scavengers have sharp eyesight that helps them spot dead animals from the air. They use their hooked beaks to rip apart the animal's flesh. Condors can clean up carcasses super fast, says Kelly Walker, a condor keeper at the Oregon Zoo. California condors once soared across western North America from Mexico to Canada, and that began to change in the mid-1800s when settlers arrived. To try to rid the land of predators, the settlers poisoned wolves and bears. Condors ate the poison and died too. Because of poisoning and other threats, condors' numbers plummeted. By 1982, only 22 wild condors were left. To save them, people caught the last birds and moved them to breeding centers. There, scientists are working hard to bring their population back. The birds still face risks in the wild, but thanks to scientists' efforts, condors' numbers are almost up to 600 today. Each winter at the Oregon Zoo's Condor Breeding Center, zookeepers wait for each female condor to produce one precious egg. In the wild, eggs can break by accident. That's why at the Oregon Zoo, workers place condor eggs in incubators. These machines keep the eggs safe and warm. With the real condor eggs safe in an incubator, Walker places fake eggs in the condor nests. This tricks the parents into thinking they are caring for real eggs and helps prepare them to care for the hatchlings when they are born. After nearly 2 months, just before the real eggs hatch, workers return them to their parents to raise. Once the birds have grown, zookeepers train them to survive in the wild. At a year and a half old, they're ready. Since 2003, the Oregon Zoo has released more than 70 birds. Every so often, despite the scientists' efforts, an egg doesn't survive. In the wild, condor chicks listen to their parents' breathing and heartbeats through the eggshells. Walker wondered if scientists could record these sounds and play them for the eggs in the incubator. Would that help the eggs develop and the condor chicks survive? Luckily, a tool already existed that could help Walker answer her question. A fake bird egg that contained technology to sense motion and temperature. Scientists had used the device in the nests of birds like parrots and Arctic ducks. Walker contacted the scientists. Could they create a condor egg decoy that could record sounds in the condor nest? The scientists said yes. Constance Woodman, a researcher at Texas A&M University, built the smart eggs with a 3D printer. She used thin, sturdy plastic and dyed it pale green. It looked just like a condor egg, says Walker. To make sure the smart egg had the same weight as a real egg, Walker glued stones inside it. But would condors accept the fake? In the spring of 2022, it was time to find out. The first pair to sit on a smart egg were a female known as number 762 and her male partner. The birds treated the eggs like it was their own. But soon, Walker's team ran into a snag. The smart egg recorded the parents' breathing, but it didn't pick up the sounds of the parents' heartbeats. Next, Walker plans to try a different microphone inside the egg. Once we get the heartbeats, we'll play them for the real egg, said Walker. Those sounds will help make the incubators feel more like real condor nests to developing chicks. Scientists hope that will help them meet their goal to make sure every bird in their care survives. Each egg is important, says Walker. And that does finish up the Super STEM February 2024 issue. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great day.